As we get into the new year, of course, we're still dealing with a lot of issues from the year that was. That certainly includes the COVID-19 pandemic, which is having a major impact, not just on physical and mental health, but also on the economy. And it's hitting some sectors of the economy and some particular people a lot harder than others. What is the state of the economy heading into 2021? What's the outlook for the year to come? For that, we are joined on the phone by Patrick McHugh of the North Carolina Justice Center. He's the Budget and Tax Center Research Manager. NCJustice.org is the website. Much more information and data and numbers beyond what we're going to be able to talk about in the next few minutes. But Patrick, thank you so much for being with us today, and Happy New Year.
All right. Top of the year to you, sir.
So getting into the picture for 2021, what is the overall state of the economy in North Carolina? What are you seeing?
I think the first thing that is always true, but is even more glaringly clear now, is that we don't have one economy. We have a variety of economies that different people and different families and different communities live in that can exist right next to each other and be wildly different in terms of what it means for folks, both during a pandemic and beyond. So, for example, if you look at the job losses that have happened during this pandemic, obviously there were the sort of worst and most acute at the very beginning of the pandemic, but we're still way below pre-pandemic levels of employment in total. But if you actually drill down into that data, what you see is that folks, on average, earning above around $60,000 a year in North Carolina, the number of jobs paying those kinds of wages are actually above where we were before COVID-19 arrived. So not saying there's nobody in that sort of income bracket that hasn't been affected, but on average, the recession is effectively over for well-paid North Carolinians. And that's true, there's a lot of folks that can work remotely, a lot of white-collar jobs, a lot of professional jobs that, sure, your life was certainly thrown upside down, but it wasn't the sort of economic and financial catastrophe that it was for a lot of other folks. And if you look at the low end of the income bracket, folks earning under $20,000, that's where the biggest job losses continue to exist. So that's an example within, folks that work for a living that earn wages or that get most of their income from wages. There's one reality for folks that were able to sort of transition into working remotely, and a very, very different reality for a lot of the worst paid folks in North Carolina who had the least financial cushion to fall back on and are still continuing to experience the worst financial harm from all of this.
How do you see that progressing in the months ahead?
I mean, it's going to be tough. The reality is, I'm not an epidemiologist, but I think everyone acknowledges that we've certainly got several more months to go, at the very least, before a vaccine is in place well enough to get us anywhere close back to normal operating economic reality. So we've still got several more months to go where we're going to have to find ways of getting people through. And it's both the immediate and then the longer-term consequences of this. So, Congress finally, after months of debate, got, sort of off the sidelines and passed another bill in December to extend some unemployment insurance benefits and, another small round of stimulus checks and a few other things that were vitally needed. I mean, really vitally needed, because so many of those federal benefits were running out and we have such a paltry unemployment insurance system here in North Carolina. A lot of those folks, again, heavily concentrated at the low end of the income spectrum that are still out of work, were really, really facing dire consequences if action hadn't been taken. But let's be really clear, that's a down payment, but it's not actually going to complete a bridge for the families that are being harmed by this to the other side of this pandemic. And that sort of takes us to the longer consequence of this. It's not, we're not just trying to help folks survive. I mean, that is important. But if we want to speed the recovery, you need to have families that haven't burned through every single asset that they have and gone into massive debt when we get to the other side of the pandemic. So if we sort of scoot our way through this by forcing people to burn through everything that they've got and go into huge debt, that's going to create not just harm for them, but a huge weight on the economy after COVID-19 that's going to make the recovery a lot slower unless we act now to support those folks.
Speaking with Patrick McHugh, North Carolina Justice Center. Again, ncjustice.org is the website. So kind of picking up on that, what would you like to see Congress do? There's momentum for the $2,000 stimulus check. Is there something even better than that that Congress could consider?
Well, unfortunately, we're kind of left with a lot of partial solutions because we don't really have a system in this country of quickly getting money into the pockets of people that need it the most. Mm. So, you know, this is something that European countries built these kinds of systems before a crisis. And it's kind of hard to engineer something effective in the middle of a crisis like this. But yeah, those stimulus checks, those are a good measure. They reach a lot of people. Unfortunately, they don't reach everybody. There's a lot of folks that didn't earn enough in the last couple of years to have filed federal income taxes, and that means another sort of administrative set of hurdles that they have to go through. People who are unbanked or who are in precarious housing situations, often moving around, sometimes those checks don't get to them as quickly. So again, unfortunately, those checks, because they're distributed as a tax rebate and we don't have a better system for getting money into the pockets of folks that are hurting the most, a lot of times they end up missing the very people that need them the most desperately. Whereas folks, again, who may not have ever lost a job and are working from remotely, those checks showed up in their bank accounts, you know, within a week or two. Mm-hmm. Unemployment insurance is another one of those systems that the supplementary benefits, both in duration, the maximum number of weeks that folks are eligible, and the amount they're eligible to receive, the federal supplementary benefits have been an absolute lifeline to a huge number of North Carolina families because we have such a paltry system here in North Carolina. So that's another case where there was an extension to some of those benefits in the December bill, but it won't take us all the way through likely the full economic time horizon of this crisis. So that's another place where extending a little bit more permanently or a little bit longer the duration of those benefits, maybe tying it not just to a hard end date, but to a set of economic conditions that would say that we're really out of the woods, would be a way of at least giving some more stability and assurance to people that are relying on those. Those are all things can be done. And then I think the longer term lessons we're going to have to really learn after this is how do we actually engineer a system that truly helps everybody that needs it and in the same breath provides the sort of economic stimulus that will speed a recovery without essentially having to kind of retool a bunch of other systems that were never designed to do this, to meet a crisis like this, into being the way that we help folks.
Those are on the federal level. What do you want to see happen on the state and even the local level right now?
Sure. No, that's a great question. You know, the reality is we are actually sitting in the state of North Carolina on, as of most recent count, north of $4 billion in unappropriated funds. And that's a consequence of a number of things, partially because we haven't passed the full budget over the last 2 years. And so there's been a lot of money building up that is our taxpayer dollars that are just sitting in an account right now while people are hurting. So as the legislature comes back in, there's a lot of things that we could do with that money to help people that are suffering right now. Stay in their homes, make sure that they've got food, that people have child care provided so that they can go back to work if it's possible. I mean, there's a really wide range of needs, but I think one of the most important things to recognize is we actually have money sitting in an account right now that can be used in this moment of crisis. And if there's a time to use unreserved funds, I'm hard-pressed to think of a better time than right now. So that's certainly something that can be done here in North Carolina, and that can look a variety of different ways in terms of the types of assistance that is so desperately needed. I think another thing that's worth sort of underscoring, and this goes back to your first question about the the nature of the economy and the different economies that exist around the state is what we've started to see over the last few months is that the worst proportional job losses are starting to settle in outside of the major largest metropolitan areas in the state. Initially, at the beginning of the recession, the biggest job losses were all in, you know, the Durhams, the Charlottes, the Raleighs of the state.
Yep.
And now we're starting to see those places recover more. And now the places where the biggest proportional job losses are sort of the next tier of regional job hubs, places like Fayetteville or Morganton or Goldsboro or Asheville, places that are the engines of regions, whole regions of the state. So we need to start really thinking about not repeating the mistakes that we made after the Great Recession, where we sort of let the whole market take its course and didn't really target assistance to places that were struggling the most to recover. So that's another thing that we need to start putting in place is a plan for getting those parts of the state that took the longest to bounce back from the Great Recession into a quicker path to recovery this time around.
Speaking with Patrick McHugh, and we got to start wrapping up, but I've been curious about this question, and I've asked a number of folks this, and I've always gotten some really interesting replies, and I'm wondering your take on it as well. There's so many different economic metrics out there that we just sort of habitually follow that right now just seem to be completely disconnected from the actual reality on the ground for people living their lives. Like the stock market went through the roof in 2020, and obviously that doesn't really correspond to how people are actually doing. What metric is actually useful if you want to get a sense of how the economy actually is and how people are making it through from day to day? What numbers should we be looking at or focusing on?
That's a great question. And, you know, to paraphrase Mark Twain, you know, there are lies, damn lies, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And now there's an interesting connection here to what we were just talking about. One of the other reasons that there's a ton of money sitting in the bank account of North Carolina is because high income people, people who derive a lot of their income from stock ownership and corporations, have actually had a great year. The number of billionaires that have realized huge amounts of new wealth and corporations that have posted record profits this year is really staggering. And so that shows that it's not that the entire economy just ground to a halt. It's just that the benefits of that market activity are being captured by a very, very small number of people. So there's a reality to the stock market. It's just not a reality that meets a lot of people's lived experience. And this, again, goes back to why, you know, that it's sort of morally unconscionable that we allow that sort of thing to happen. And it's economically foolish because it's going to slow down our recovery to keep that capital sort of isolated in a few pockets. I would say, you know, back to your question about, like, what metric should you look at? You know, I'm a big fan of sort of relative income. You know, look at, if you want to understand how we're really doing in running an economy that does what economies are supposed to do, which is to generate livelihoods and well-being, what's the difference between the average income of folks sort of in the bottom, say, 25% or bottom 15%, basically the people that are getting paid the least, how big is the gap between what they're taking home and what the CEOs of the companies that they work for are taking home, or what people who earn most of their income from owning capital, from owning stocks. That, to me, tells you more about the health of an economy than, you know, what stocks are worth, or even just the raw dollar figure of what people's income is. And it's not simply a question of what's fair or morally right. It's a question of what's economically efficient. When you sideline and park huge amounts of capital in a tiny number of pockets, that means that there's a whole bunch of folks out there that are in desperate need that aren't able to spend and drive the economy. So when you build an economy that closes that gap, between folks sort of at the bottom end of the income spectrum and the folks that are the most fortunate and doing the best. That's how you build an economy that's more stable, where people have resources to fall back on when things like COVID-19 come along, and that is more poised to recover and expand when a crisis like this passes.
Anything else that folks ought to know?
I mean, I think that's the gist of it, is up and down the spectrum, folks are living in some very different economic realities, and that's not always by accident. There's intentional policy choices that we've made that allow a tiny number of people to siphon off so much of the capital that this economy generates, and the consequences of that become shockingly obvious during a crisis like COVID-19. So hopefully it won't take another event like this to focus people's attention on the ways in which we've allowed an economy to develop that is structurally unsound, but it's far too top-heavy, and when the winds start blowing, gets knocked off its feet.
More information, data, statistics, and analysis online at ncjustice.org. Go to the Budget and Tax Center specifically for Patrick's work. Patrick McHugh, thank you so much for being with us today.
Absolutely, and here's to hopefully better times ahead.